It is Thursday, April 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, tensions persist between the United States and Russia because of Syria.
Syria, the bombing, a completely unilateral act by the United States, and from the perspective of Russia, a clearly illegal act, has really not helped in the process, Anik.
Turkish voters prepare to go to the polls to vote on a constitutional referendum, and a member of the popular country music group Alabama announces an end to touring. It's all ahead. The presidents of Russia and the U.S. have acknowledged that bilateral relations are poor. Russian President Vladimir Putin said the level of trust has not gotten better and probably has been degraded since President Donald Trump entered office in January. Mr. Trump's assessment came during a White House news conference with visiting NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg.
We may be at an all-time low in terms of relationship with Russia. This is built for a long period of time. But we're going to see what happens. Putin is the leader of Russia. Russia is a strong country. We're a very, very strong country. We're going to see how that all works out.
Mr. Trump said it would be fantastic if the U.S. could get along with Mr. Putin and Russia. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson was in Moscow Wednesday for talks with Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and Mr. Putin.
We spoke extensively about Syria, and in some areas, we share a common view. We agreed there needs to be more senior-level communication between our two countries, both at a diplomatic and military level. But there is a broad range of other issues in which we have differences.
He said they agreed to establish a working group to address smaller issues and make progress in stabilizing the relationship before tackling more serious problems. The Kremlin said Thursday it's too early yet to know whether relations between the two countries will improve. Russia analyst Mark Edaly of the University of Western Australia tells International Edition's Victor Beatty bilateral relations have been bad for some time, and the U.S. missile strike on a Syrian airbase last week following a chemical weapons attack did not help.
And I think there has been hopes in Moscow that this would change radically after, you know, the announcement by the current administration that they want to mend ties with Russia. Of course, that has been tried before and hasn't worked. But Syria, the bombing, a completely unilateral act by the United States, and from the perspective of Russia, a clearly illegal act, has really not helped in the process, Anik.
There are concerns, of course, that the U.S. and Russia will not see eye to eye on Syria. Mr. Putin doubling down on support for President Bashar al-Assad. Do you expect Russian policy to change on that score anytime soon?
Well, I very much doubt it. I don't think they see any alternative. I mean, there's two things. One is, in my reading, Russia is trying to basically win the civil war for Assad in Syria because they want a stable regime. They don't care that it will be a dictatorial regime, and they don't see any alternative to him. If they could find an alternative candidate, they might be willing to shift to that, but at this point, it's very hard to see who that would be. The second point is that Russia is simply on principle opposed to the idea of regime change and what they see as meddling in internal affairs, which is what they are worried about in Russia itself. So the Putin government is quite worried about the kind of regime change coming home to Russia. So there's a matter of principle involved for Moscow as well.
Do both sides want better ties? And if so, how are they going to achieve it?
In principle, probably both sides want better ties. But in practice, the policies they support, both sides are at quite at loggerheads, right? I mean, there's Ukraine, there's Syria. So this will not be an easy fix. This will require probably medium to long-term diplomatic efforts, and it's not going to be easy. Simply telling Putin that he should drop his support for Assad will not work.
Mark Edeli said in Syria and elsewhere, one of Russia's objectives is to be once again viewed as a great power. He said Russia has been on the world stage for a long time and will continue to do so. He also said problems like Syria and Ukraine will not be solved without Russia. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's happening?
Well, President Trump echoing those comments that we heard a little earlier on the show on Twitter, tweeting out this morning that things will work out fine between the USA and Russia. At the right time, everyone will come to their senses and there will be lasting peace. So people hopeful that that can indeed happen, but there's a lot of skepticism on social media that that can actually come to fruition. And, you know, as we talk about President Trump, usually he's the one dominating the headlines and the trending topics on social media. But in the past week, we've talked about a number of PR nightmares for Pepsi and United Airlines, and then White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer with his comments about chemical weapons. And now another PR nightmare for conservative commentator Jeffrey Lord, who was on CNN earlier today, and he said this. He said, think of President Trump as the Martin Luther King of healthcare. Comments that are not sitting well, needless to say, on social media with a lot of people. You have tweets, for instance, like this one. One person says, Donald Trump never got beaten and thrown in jail for trying to pass health care. And another person getting a lot of attention, political commentator Simone Sanders, who was appearing in this segment with Jeffrey Lord, and she shut him down in this video where after he said those comments. That video is now going viral in addition to Lord's comments. And there are a lot of calls on social media now for Lord to be suspended or even fired from CNN as a result of these comments. Now, the flip side of that, there are some people who are defending him, saying that it's political correctness run amok, that it shouldn't be taken as seriously as it is. But by and large, the vast majority of people are skewering him on social media and taking these comments very negatively.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then the other big PR nightmare that we had this week was, of course, United Airlines and that passenger, Dr. David Dow, being pulled off of the plane after refusing to give up his seat.
Tremendous amount on that. Yeah.
Tremendous coverage everywhere. And it seems like every time there's a new angle, we get a new hashtag, we get more coverage. Well, we're getting that today after Dr. Dow's family and his lawyers appeared at a press conference and gave some insight into his injuries. They said he was just released from the hospital on Wednesday night and had a broken nose, a concussion, and two teeth knocked out. Now, there is some skepticism about those injuries, a lot of people saying that they're playing it up, especially for what many expect to be an impending lawsuit against United Airlines. But what is serious is this PR nightmare for United. It continues because every time the family goes in front of a camera or every time there's more information about this case, it adds to the fuel to that fire and doesn't look like it's going to let up anytime soon. So we will continue to monitor that. I'm sure there'll be more angles on that in the coming week, and no end in sight for United. We'll see what they do to respond to this.
Yeah, it should be very interesting. Well, thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor, Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. The United Nations says it will close its Haiti peacekeeping mission in October. An errant attack by a U.S.-led coalition kills 18 allied soldiers in Syria. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad remains defiant as activists report a surge in Syrian government attacks. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA's MAVEN spacecraft, which has been circling Mars since September 2014, has detected metal in the Martian atmosphere. Joseph Probowski of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center is co-author of a study that details the discovery. He says the orbiting space probe made the first direct detection of the permanent presence of metallic ions in the ionosphere of a planet other than Earth. Grabowski explains that because these metallic ions can last a long time and be carried far from the region of their origin by winds and electric fields, they can be used to convey motion in the Martian ionosphere in a way similar to how a lofted leaf can reveal wind direction. Scientists say that the metal comes from a constant barrage of tiny meteoroids that fall onto Mars. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we'll have details of a new study on the effects of air pollution. Voters in Turkey will consider a constitutional referendum Sunday on whether to transform their government from the current parliamentary system into a powerful executive presidency. The issue has split the nation. Critics accuse President Recep Tayyip Erdogan of trying to create a dictatorship, while his supporters claim the changes will protect the will of the people. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul on the last days of the campaign.
Istanbul, Turkey's largest city, accounts for about one-fifth of the electorate, and how it votes will likely prove decisive in Sunday's referendum. With opinion polls showing the outcome is too close to call, both sides are feverishly campaigning. Yes, campaigners argue that extending the president's powers will strengthen democracy by ensuring stability. This man shouts, against the terrorists, we say yes. Against imperialist powers, we say yes. For the no voters, the proposed reforms, extending presidential power over the judiciary and allowing rule by decree, opens the door to dictatorship, as this no campaigner explains. She says, people come and ask us why we should say no. We try to explain to them. To be honest, we say no to one-man regime. For both opponents and supporters, the referendum has come down to one man, incumbent President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. The Yes campaigners believe the proposed reforms are all about enabling the president to continue to carry out his program to develop Turkey. Hasan Gürkalp is a Yes campaigner.
Recep Tayyip Erdogan, AK Parti dönemiyle iktidara geldiğinde...
He says when Recep Tayyip Erdogan came to power with his AK party, he first fought against gangs and the deep state, took very important steps in the health sector, and now, compared to the 2000s, Turkey has a 500% increase in progress. Yes campaigners focus on Erdogan's achievements rather than the merits of the constitutional reforms. For many, it appears a winning strategy, because after nearly 20 years in power, Erdogan still remains by far Turkey's most popular politician. Retiree Ibrahim Yazkar explains why he is voting yes. I've been voting for Tayyip Erdogan for 17 to 18 years, and he never failed me, he says. If he wants, he can just sit in the presidential mansion and sign papers. But this man loves this country so much that he can't stop. He believes he should do more. That's why I believe in him. But the fairness of the referendum campaign is increasingly in question. In many areas of Istanbul, like the rest of the country, it can be difficult to find no flags and posters. Numerous no campaign rallies were banned by state officials, including in Istanbul. According to a recent study, 90% of the media coverage was devoted to the Yes campaign. The pro-Kurdish HDP, Turkey's second largest opposition party and one of the most ardent opponents of the proposed constitutional reform, has faced the greatest difficulties. Ercan Demir is a district head of the HDP in Istanbul. We are seeing political pressure, he says. Our co-leaders and 13 members of parliament are in prison, and almost 5,000 of our people are facing charges or under arrest. We can't talk about a fair vote and an honest referendum here, he adds. But hope never goes away. That is what is important. We shouldn't give up on hope. As our co-leader Demirtas says, courage is contagious. Despite such obstacles, the referendum is still too close to call. Some observers suggest that could be due in part to a perception that the difficulties facing the no campaigners only strengthens their argument that Turkish democracy is at stake on Sunday. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
Industrial air pollution causes nearly 3.5 million deaths a year, and international trade is shifting some of the harmful effects from consuming nations to producing nations, according to a study in the journal Nature. Mike O'Sullivan spoke with one of the authors of the report, who says that high consumption in the United States and Western Europe affects the health of people and manufacturing countries such as China.
Trade is shifting the costs of pollution, as seen in the example of toys bought for American children, says Earth System scientist Steve Davis.
Usually those things are made in another part of the world, most often China. So by buying something made in China, we're effectively outsourcing the pollution that comes from the manufacture of that product.
Worldwide, air pollution produced by exported goods and services caused more than 750,000 deaths in 2007, the baseline year of the study. Some pollution from eastern China reaches Japan and the Korean Peninsula, causing thousands of premature deaths, and the airborne particles continue to western North America. But airborne particles that result from American and European trade with China caused nearly 110,000 premature deaths in that nation in 2007. The researchers say that as China becomes a consuming society, its manufacturing is shifting, but the pattern is similar.
Some of that is now being outsourced by China into other up-and-coming industrialized countries like Cambodia, Vietnam, India.
And those countries are bearing the health costs. Pollution is a major problem in China's industrial cities, and the country is trying to clean up its air. This, as environmentalists accuse President Donald Trump of reducing America's commitment to cut pollution. Trump has taken several actions reversing Obama-era clean air regulations, which he says do little to help and cost American jobs. But scientists are worried.
There is a concern that in sort of pursuit of economic gains, we're maybe willing to now sacrifice our environmental quality, which has been something we've pointed a finger at China for a long time, so it's a bit ironic.
The study authors say environmental pollution caused by manufacturing and by worldwide trade requires a global response that balances the need for clean air and growth. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Irvine, California.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world, and you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
A recent announcement by Jeff Cook, one-third of the legendary country group Alabama, has fans concerned and worried. He recently revealed that he would no longer be touring with Alabama due to health reasons. Nikki Strong of VOA 1 has the details. So, Nikki, what happened?
Well, this week, Alabama, Jeff Cook, Randy Owen, Teddy Gentry, they released a video statement that was posted on the Tennessean newspaper's website, where Jeff Cook, who is the group's guitarist and the fiddle player as well as a singer, shared that he has Parkinson's disease, which is a disorder of the central nervous system that primarily impacts motor skills. So it has robbed him of a lot of his coordination. He says it impacts his balance. It causes tremors and stiffness. He was diagnosed 4 years ago. And he and the band have kept his diagnosis secret because he said he didn't want to burden anyone about his condition. And he said he's not calling it quits per se, but, and this is a quote, he says, "Sometimes our bodies dictate what we have to do. And mine is telling me it's time to take a break and heal."
Well, there's no cure for Parkinson's.
No, not yet. You can manage some of the symptoms, but at this point, his has interfered with his capacity to tour. He said it has made it extremely frustrating to try and play guitar and fiddle or sing. Initially, he thought he had a pinched nerve, and his bandmates thought that he might have had a mild stroke. And then he went to the doctor and they said he had Parkinson's, and they've kept it quiet for about 4 years. A lot of people thought there were rumors that he had, you know, was doing drugs and stuff, but it was actually the Parkinson's taking a toll on him.
Will the group still continue to perform?
They will. And even Teddy Gentry said, quote, "We could hire 10 people, but we can't replace Jeff Cook." So he will make appearances when he's up to it. A third mic will always be on the stage for him. Other musicians will fill in on vocals and music, and Jeff will continue to record with them in the studio. It's hard for everyone, I can imagine, especially for the rest of the band, because they're like brothers. And Jeff has been a critical part of making Alabama one of the best-selling bands of all time. He even plays a pivotal role in how you experience them in concert, because when he gets to playing, you know, everybody stands up. You know, he gets the people dancing. So it's difficult. But despite how hard it is to deal with the news, at the end of his video statement, he says, "Life is good. And as long as you are breathing, there are no bad days." Aww. Yeah. And so you could see the statement in full from the band on our Facebook and Twitter pages at VOA One The Hits.
You can also hear the music of Alabama and more great country music legends on VOA One's Country Hits with Nikki Strong. Thanks a lot, Nikki.
You're welcome.
Oh, play me some mountain music like Grandma and Grandpa used to play. Then I'll float on down the river to Cajun Hideaway.
The music of Alabama brings an end to our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
29 years ago today, then-Iraqi President Saddam Hussein started Operation Anfal, his murderous campaign against populations in northern Iraq. The Al-Anfal campaign began in 1986 and ended in 1989. In 1987, toward the end of the war between Iran and Iraq, Saddam Hussein put his cousin, Ali Hassan al-Majid, who was infamous for his brutality, in charge of Iraq's northern region, which included Iraqi Kurdistan. What followed was a horrifying display of killing and destruction. The Al-Anfal campaign was meant to punish and exterminate the Kurdish population and to terrorize other minority ethnic groups, including Assyrians, Shabaks, Iraqi Turkmen, Yazidis, and Mandians. Civilian communities were bombarded by aircraft and artillery and attacked by heavily armed infantry. Civilians were rounded up. Boys and men of fighting age were summarily executed or later executed en masse. The rest were confined to concentration camps, where some died of starvation or exposure. Some 4,000 Kurdish villages and at least 31 Assyrian communities were razed to the ground during the Al-Anfal campaign. Yet the most heinous atrocity committed by the Iraqi government against its own people was the murder by poison gas of thousands of civilians in the Kurdish-Iraqi town of Halabja and in as many as 24 other villages. For this deed, al-Majid earned the nickname Chemical Ali. In all, the Al-Anfal campaign killed anywhere from 50,000 to 100,000 non-combatant civilians and displaced at least 1 million of Iraq's 3.5 million Kurds. In recognition of the loss of so many innocent civilians during the Al-Anfal campaign of 29 years ago, all Iraqis should unite to honor the memory of those lost by working together to find a joint path to defeating the evil facing Iraq today, Daesh.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.